not screw up metaphors, and we will not interpret God's interpretation. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another week of Revelation. And we're getting into Revelation, and we're having things revealed to us. The messengers are speaking to John. John is speaking to the seven ecclesias, and we're reading it and understanding it. The unveiling, 17. Let's just keep going. Let's start the week running here. And the messenger said to me, verse 7, wherefore do you marvel? I shall be declaring to you the secret of the woman and of the wild beast. And of the wild beast. I freaked out a little bit about that on Friday. Which is bearing her and has the seven heads and the 10 horns. Which, by the way, is the same amount of heads and horns added up as the individual heads and horns of the four beasts described by Daniel in chapter 2 that came out of the sea. Because this wild beast is a composite of the religions. It's now been made one religion. The four religions of the world have been condensed into one super religion. One sicko religion. Sicko and super. I like the alliterative truth there. And it is now controlling the whole earth on the back of political power. Or should I say perhaps that the power wielded by the Jews, and I'll go ahead and say it, get used to me, in the last 5 or 6 chapters here, saying Jews. I could say Israel and sound less offensive, but we're talking about Jews here. This is going to look bad for the Jews from here on out, at least through chapter 19. But keep in mind that Jesus Christ is the King of the Jews. This is helpful information because the Jews, otherwise known as Israel, are going to be changed, just like you were changed, right? We could be all upset at Israel. Oh, they crucified the Messiah. They're stupid. They don't even know that the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem is a remnant of Pilate's Praetorium. It's a Roman barracks. How ignorant can these people be? And Paul explains it in Romans 11. They're not ignorant of their own accord. They are hardened by God. Because you and I wouldn't be here talking about the evangel of the grace of God if Israel had not rejected her Messiah. The apostasies of Israel is the catalyst that brings God to the nations. Just like Paul throwing his hands up in the book of Acts, how we thought we'd bring it to you. You're the people of God. You have the legislature, the covenants, the scriptures came through you. And yet you've deemed yourselves unworthy of truth. Lo, we go to the nations. Now this whole process is going to be reversed. In the book of Acts, Israel started strong. Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost, Jesus had just come to his people, and 5,000 come to believe in the truth. And yet, in the middle of the book, we see the persecution begin with Israel. The leaders of Israel reject the message of the 12 disciples of Christ. And in Acts chapter 9, a new player is introduced, Saul, who's on the road to Damascus. He is converted by Jesus Christ, by the glorified Christ. And for the rest of the book of Acts, we see Peter becoming less and less prominent, and Paul takes Peter's place. And now Paul is the prominent one in the rest of the book of Acts. And Hebrews describes this transference of power between the circumcision announcement, the announcement of the circumcision evangel, and Paul's gospel. As John the Baptist said concerning Christ, he said, I must decrease, he must increase. Well, we saw the increase of Israel in Acts chapter 2, and at that time the nation still had nothing. They only could eat the scraps that fell from the table of the chosen nation. But in the end of this age, we will see this process be reversed. Now God is finishing up with the nations. And now Israel's going to come back into the forefront. It's the reverse of what happened in Acts. And really, it's the reverse of what happened in Genesis chapter 10, 12 with the calling of Abraham. The nations were, trumpeted on the front lines. There were God was the God of all the nations, and he still is. But beginning with Abraham, now these other nations are going dim. God's turning down the volume of the other nations, and now he's bringing Abraham forward, and he's calling Abraham. And through Abraham's loins, Isaac and Jacob, he's bringing Israel. Then when Paul comes along in the middle of Acts, we have a record of things reversing. And Paul becomes the man. And we've been in that condition called the era of the nations now when Israel's on low volume. Now Paul's coming into low volume. You notice how popular Paul is these days? All right then. Paul is now going away on the earth. We are going away on the earth. Our voice becoming less and less influential on the planet. Nobody cares. So we are just going to one day go away. The earth is not going to care because Israel is coming back. Israel is going to be awakened. Israel is going to be shaken again by God, and he is going to bring his spirit upon her. And in the meantime, we're not here anymore. But we are causing explosions and new disruptions in the celestial realm. Because I haven't even intimated to you at all the volume and the transitions taking place in the celestial realm. But we have similar transitions that will be taking place soon in the celestial realms as the one I'm describing here to you today between Israel and the nations. Only in the celestial realm, it's satanic powers versus body of Christ powers. Because there was a day when jurisdiction, a certain jurisdiction was given to evil powers. Talking about the heavens now, forget the Middle East, forget Israel. Jurisdiction was given to powers in the heavens, and many of them malevolent. They're not good. And Jesus Christ came to earth around 3 AD for a dual purpose. Number one, he's the Messiah of Israel. Well, actually, that's number two, but it presented itself as number one. He's the Messiah of Israel. It was the first thing on the stage of earth, and he fulfilled the promises. He became of the seed of David and of Abraham before him. And Paul said in Romans 15:8, he came to confirm the patriarchal promises. But above that, he came to call out a people from among the nations, and that is the body of Christ. And they are going to be used. And of course, nobody knew this till Paul was called Saul on the road to Damascus. You think Peter, James, John, and the others understood that the cross of Christ dealt with anything except the sins of one nation? No, they had no idea. That secret, and it was a secret, was revealed to Paul. So now here's the other transference. Here's the bigger transference of power, is that the kingdoms of heaven are going to become strangely dim, and they are going to give way to us. We will displace the current power structure. Buddy, they are gearing up for this. They know that a new force is coming. And it's why your enemies now are not the flesh. I know your enemies are manifested in the flesh, but we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against powers, principalities, sovereigns, mights, world mights of wickedness. Ephesians chapter 6, among the celestials. Why? Because the big shots among them know that it is our destiny to displace them. It's our destiny to usurp. Usurp carries with it a negative, like you're taking something that doesn't belong to you. No, we are being given the kingdom. What Jesus said to Peter, I give you the keys to the kingdom. Whatever you unlock gets unlocked. Whatever you keep locked stays locked. We're being given the same power in the celestial realm. But there's so little said about it. But I think that I can appropriately take examples of Jesus speaking to Peter on earth, and I think I can apply that to the body of Christ, the glorified Christ telling to us, here are the keys. You are now worthy. You operate in my name. You operate with my power. You are clothed with power from on high, and your word is my word. Whatever you bind here is bound. Whatever you unbind is unbound, and your word is as good as mine. Have at it. And so they're running for the hills at that point. If there are hills in the celestials, and I'm not clear if there are or not. Sorry, I don't have a revelation for you on that. But the beings now in power, we're going to be running for those hills, and we are going to be the new kid in town. I regret saying it that way because it's stupid. New kid in town. Oh, we are the new dignitaries in town. Back to the unveiling, chapter 17. The wild beast which you perceived was and is not and is about to be ascending out of the submerged chaos. We know that the wild beast sustained a fatal injury. The wild beast was miraculously brought back to life. He was, he is not, and he's about to be descending out of the submerged chaos, be going away into destruction. So what a career. I'd be getting dizzy if I was the wild beast. Here's your career. You're going to be, first you're going to be, then you're going to be not, then you're going to be again, then you're going to be ascending out of the submerged chaos, and then you're going to be going away to destruction. I was like, can I just go away to destruction right off the bat? And just put me into the destruction and forget the preliminaries, because it sounds like I'm going to have a very frustrating career of thinking I'm great, then being killed, then coming back, and I'm all that, now I'm nothing, now I'm in the lake of fire. See, but yet we have this information. But as the wild beast embodied this time in a person, the wild beast, remember, I said this to you before, the wild beast is not only a system of worship centered in the literal city of Babylon, but it's also personified a person. There's the kingdom of Christ, and then there's Christ, the man, Jesus Christ, the person, the man. So it's both ways. You just have to look at the context. And marvel shall those dwelling on the earth whose names are not written on the scroll of life from the disruption of the world when they observe the wild beast. They're just optically screwed up. They're optically challenged in the sense that that's all they have. We have a term for photo ops. We have a term for how to make things look good so that people on the earth think you're great. We call it the optics. Have you looked at the optics? In other words, how is this going to appear to the people? And many people today live their lives that way and only that way. How is this going to look? How am I going to look to everybody else? And that's the critical thing in this world of shallow people. They don't do anything except they stick their finger in the wind and figure out where the prevailing winds are blowing, and then they go that way because they want to be like everybody else. They don't want to stand out. This is fatal, fatal thinking. But that's what we're seeing here. Those whose names are not written on the scroll of life are doing one thing. They're observing the wild beast. They're observing the wild beast, seeing that it was and is not and will be present. Ooh, it was, is not, and will be present. Too bad you don't know the last part of that. And is going away into destruction. But we have the behind-the-scenes look because we're special. We are. I'll close with this today. We are special. John was special. You know, this is the best-selling book in the United States, in the world, the Bible. Not this particular version that I'm holding before you on the laundry camp, but the scriptures themselves, and yet nobody knows what's in it. Because Christianity has tricked people into reading this as a recipe book for moral behavior. How do you behave in the world? Read the Bible and find out. Instead of seeing it for what it is, which is a revelation of God, and specifically here, of Jesus Christ. But no, they see it as, this book's going to help me get to heaven, and if I do everything it says, ooh, that's a mistake.